Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to Podcart. Used to be Glasgow Podcart the last time that I spoke to this guest.
It's international Podcart now.
It is.
Interstellar Podcart.
Come a wanker.
You haven't become a wanker, you just...
I've sold out.
I don't even fucking live here anymore. Don't talk to me about selling out.
My guest this week is Aram Hubbert, or known fondly by people that know him, Hubby.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm all right. I'm...
I've asked you to... So I'm going to play two of your tracks from your latest album, but mm-hmm. I've asked you to pick five tracks. Now, you've chosen them from the collaborators that you've worked with on your latest album. So the first track is by a lady called Catherine Joseph, mm-hmm. Who I think everyone that kind of comes into contact with her or just kind of sees her live or whatever, or even interacts with her on Twitter, it becomes quite obsessed with her and intoxicated by her almost. How did the relationship start with you guys?
I don't know how she knew about me, but I picked up her album probably about 6 months after everyone else had been raving about it. I'm usually late on that stuff, and I really loved it. It was great. And then a mutual friend of ours, Finn Lamarinell, he kind of invited me along to do a wee secret set at his single launch, and Catherine was supporting him as well. So yeah, it was. I saw her play, and I was greeting, and She saw me playing, she was greeting, then afterwards it was like, "Well, do this all day." And it was quite soon after that that I started working on telling the, excuse me, on telling the trees. So yeah, I think she was one of the first people I asked, actually. I think her and Helen and Annalise were the first people I asked.
Yeah. And so you've chosen the Outtakes as the track that you wanted to play on this podcast. Mm-hmm. Why this song?
You know what? It could have been any of them off the album, to be honest. It was... I don't know what it is about that song, actually.
I think she's got the same quality as you do, in that it's an identifiable vein throughout each track, and you know that it's, like you say, it's almost... Like, I don't want to use the word trick, but it's, you know, you can identify, I guess.
Oh, you can. I'm being unnecessarily mean to Catherine, because that's what I do to people I love, and are deeply jealous of. You know, I can, even before the singing starts, I can always tell it's Catherine.
Yeah.
Just the way she touches the piano.
Yeah.
We did a show together a few weeks ago, and it was just her and the piano. And I've seen her quite a few times, always with Marcus. And I like to think I built up a tolerance to the general just weepiness that happens. But just watching her, my girlfriend Kirsty was there as well, and just her and the piano, I realised that I always use Marcus as a diversionary tactic. So when it's getting too much, I'll look at him for a wee while and go, "Oh, that's fucking clever. I like that." And it's like, then I go back to Catherine. But like, when he's not there, I was just bawling. I was sitting surrounded by shitloads of people that come to see me play, just fucking crying at them. And I get up and just hold my hand. "Oh, it's all right, happy." It was amazing. It was amazing. It's just something about... I can't describe it, which I think is why I love it so much. You know, it's not...
I love the way that she stares at people when she's playing. I know.
She toys with people's emotions, you know?
Yeah, but you do that. I always remember you said that... I don't know if you said it to me or you said it to a crowd or something. I think it was a gig that you played, and it was about playing with people's emotions, and you said that you make them laugh and then you make them cry, because it's very much, once you've got them to the laughing stage, it's so much easier to make them cry.
Well, it's like pushing someone off a cliff, you know. It's I think it's basically, you saw my really early shows, actually. My early shows were just really intense.
Yeah.
There wasn't really any humour in them, because I was really ill and it was making me feel better, and I was clutching to for dear life, you know. Mm-hmm. But over the years, it's become a very different experience for me, because I'm generally not that miserable in real life, you know. And so I like it when people laugh at my stupid jokes and stuff. But I also found my sets have a structure. They have a kind of narrative flow for the story that I want to tell that night.
Yeah.
And it's really effective. My worst nightmare is to be described as a singer songwriter, you know. But I am essentially a white guy with a beard and an acoustic guitar on a stage by myself. You know, it's hardly unique. But my worst fear is for people to think that's what I am. And it's a fair point, you know.
Because I know how much you would hate that. I think that's why I find it so funny.
I fucking hate it, you know. And it's because it's not my show. The last thing it is, and the first thing it is a very earnest guy telling you about his feelings, mm-hmm, whilst playing acoustic guitar. You know, that sounds like the worst night I can imagine. So I work very hard to make it not be that. So like, the music isn't like that, and the stories certainly aren't like that. I used to do a thing when I was out in tour with Mogwai, before anyone knew who I was, where I'd go out and pretend to be a roadie. You know, the big guy with tattoos. So, and just start playing. And be like, "What the fuck?"
That's amazing.
That was I liked doing that.
We'll move on to the next track and yes. Rachel's. Remember you telling me, so I'd never heard of this, and then...
I saw you're very young.
Yeah, but then you kind of compared it to... You said it's pretty much, it inspired quite a lot of people that I think, I don't know if it inspired, like, Muggles.
Oh,
like
God, massively, yeah. I mean, it was... they came out of the same scene as Slint, mm-hmm. and people like that in Louisville in Kentucky. And they all played together, and it was, this is where I go into the old man hobby bit for a wee while, but I think I must have first heard about them in the early mid-90s.
Mm-hmm.
I remember, yeah, because we put Godspeed on at the 13th note, and they were talking about them. And
people that is ridiculous. It's mental, isn't it? It's ridiculous.
The old 13th note, so it's crazy. But anyway, so we kept hearing rumours about this new band.
Yeah.
That's, you know, that was like Slint, Rodan type. Because Slint changed all our lives, you know. It was like, fucking, it was ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But we couldn't hear it, because the records weren't over here, and there was no internet. So when we eventually did hear it, and it was a string quartet and piano, and just the most beautiful music, it totally fucking blew my mind, because it seemed like the most punk rock thing to come from this, to be an integral part of this scene and to do their own thing. It was like the whole point of punk rock.
Yeah.
So yeah. And this album, particularly this song, I really loved. And Rachel's one of those people that I really love her solo piano records as well. But yeah, her and Helen Marnie especially were two that I just never thought I would get to write music with.
Yeah.
You know, so it was a total thrill. Under pentangle star, our eyes flicker light from the distance. Life is a sea to me, so harvest all you need to make a difference. In the wild we are free, this is all that we're meant to be. Leave all your fear behind, it's 100 times better. I promise you, I promise you.
Oh,
And obviously, speaking of Helen, I mean, that track that you've done with Helen on the album is my favourite out of all of them, and I've literally had it on repeat. And I, when I first kind of heard like electronic, and you, I was just like, okay, I don't know if I'm gonna like this. You know, you just automatically get that. You know, you make a presumption.
Yeah. It's I made this album in a really particular way. I tried to minimise my involvement in it.
Yeah.
But the interesting thing, on Sweet Dreams especially, actually, is about half of the electronics is actually the guitar.
Right.
So it's... Helen added some synth lines.
Uh-huh.
I kind of arpeggiated the synths. But... poor Paul Savage, fucking hell. I can't remember if it was this song, if it was maybe... Probably will probably do when he actually walked out of the studio and just disappeared for a while.
Really? We were working on,
because we did so much work in production on it with I had this thing where I didn't want to play to drum machines or add anything beyond the initial guitar.
Mm-hmm.
But in Sweet Dreams, for example, the drums here are actually triggered by the guitar, so I'm doing that pattern on the guitar.
That's amazing.
And then Paul devised a way to trigger drum machines every, you know, when I'm doing percussive hits, depending on the velocity and the frequency of those hits, is triggering drums. And he also did some tuned drums, so basically the percussive hits are triggering tones as well. So, and the chorus gets really big and there's this big kind of bassy melody that's from the guitar. So it's, I wanted to make electronic music without using those tools, basically.
Yeah.
So, but it's weird because if you don't say that, if people don't know that, it just sounds like me doing electro.
But that was the point.
The point was to, all of the drums you hear on the album are actually triggered from my guitar. It's just we're doubling up. We're using the guitar to trigger snares and bass drums, and it's not an overdub. It's like the actual guitar part's doing that. So I can play all of the album just on the guitar.
Right.
Apart.
And was that always the aim?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's not interesting for me to go and try and figure out how to use a drum machine or to figure out how to program synths properly, but it's
so much more organic.
Yeah, well, that's the point.
That's
the point. That's why myself and Helen can go and do Sweet Dreams.
Yeah.
Because we never really added much to the guitar and voice, apart from those synth lines. And it's why I can do all of the album live.
As the lift door closed, I pressed a button for the fourth floor. Your metal eyes cast a stare, and I didn't know what you could see. No one came in or out, and I can't count, so you must be me. You must be me. Then I awoke again when I thought I wouldn't see more. You stared at me a window and a man back in blue. Oh, no one came in or out, and I can't count who's almost me. You can't come into the eye of the storm where it's calm and things go awry. my glass up by four. You think I'm the flower, I feel like the sword. Come on, take a spin in the eye of the storm, where it's warm. No one came in or out, and I can count, so must be more. No one came in to see. I can count up to three, so it must be me. It must be me.
It was about me. It was almost about me trying to ape their music just with a guitar and no overdubs. Like, it was going back to like the earliest R.M. Hubbard stuff with like the rules about not overdubbing, not cheating. If I went to drum beat, I had to figure out how to play the drum beat whilst doing the melody.
Mm-hmm.
So Sweet Dreams especially, I wrote that because I thought that's the type of thing Helen would write.
Yeah.
And with Annika as well. That's from all of them. That's what I did. I went away. Whenever they'd say yes to it, I'd go away for 3 days, 4 days, just doing nothing but listening to their music, and then try and write a song as if they were writing it, and then send it to them, and ask them to do whatever they wanted, but just don't tell me what they're doing, or ask for permission. Just do whatever you want, send it back,
mm-hmm.
and that'll be the song.
At what point do you remember a show that you thought, okay, I don't need to talk about this anymore. I'm just going to have a good time and I'm just going to talk. I'm just going to be quite humorous. Was there a particular show that stands out for you?
No, because I do still talk about it.
Right, okay.
But it's become more less about the therapy and more about just acknowledging it.
Yeah.
And thanking people as well for coming and letting me do this, you know. Cause it's become less the reason than it's more just an explanation of why this show's happening and why it's going on, you know. But it's not.
Do you feel that because I've dealt with anxiety and I almost feel that I'm almost glad that I had it because it wouldn't have triggered other things.
Yeah.
But it's almost like a really kind of awful friend that you've got in the background.
Yeah.
And you just think, yeah, I don't know if that's the best way to explain it, really.
It's a very good way to explain it. It's like an abusive relationship, you
yeah.
know. There's something oddly comforting about feeling a depressive period coming
yeah.
on. Because there's certainty to it.
Mm-hmm.
It's recognisable and it's comfortable sometimes, you know. Even though you know it's really bad for you at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
There was a song, Breaks and Bone, called Bolt.
Yeah.
That was exactly about that. You know, mm-hmm. it's like a... It's... Yeah. It's like an abusive partner.
Yeah.
Partner being the key word there, you know. It's... form your identity is part of you.
Mm-hmm.
Which isn't to say it's not a part of you wouldn't gladly be rid of. But at other times you're... It's this weird... I've got this weird thing where I've managed to have a semi-successful career doing something I've always wanted to do in large part because of my mental illness.
Yeah. No, totally.
You know, it's weird to acknowledge that.
Mm-hmm.
And it does make you think, well, if I could take a pill and it all went away tomorrow, would I do that? You know, would
and
I?
And I've questioned that and I have often said no because it does... It kind of sets you apart from so many other people and things. And I think it just pushes you. But I guess people think you're, like, think we're quite weird for saying that.
I don't think so. I think most people would probably feel that. I think you'd be scared of losing a part of yourself. Even though it's a part of yourself that's probably the shitty bit.
Yeah.
You know, so it's... I don't know. There's days I would happily take the pill and there's days that I wouldn't. I think that's just being human, but I don't think the music helps me that much with it anymore, to be honest.
No,
I've been really ill this year and it's been because of music, so it's
yeah.
so it's not been because of music, it's been because of business, you know. But I think I recognised when I was making Breaks and Bone, I recognised that it maybe wasn't the healthiest way to deal with my mental health issues, was to rely on an ever-changing audience.
Yeah.
Because it's not stable to do it. You do two bad shows in a row and you're fucked.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's fine, you do one bad show and you're shit for a day and then you get better the next day. But, or if you do bad shows last night in your tour, then what do you do? You know, it's not a good way to do it. So I started finding better ways to deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
And just let the music be music, which is what weirdly Telling the Trees is about. It's about music. It seems like a very odd thing to say coming up from a fifth album. That's the first one that I actually thought about music for. You know, but it's true, you know. It's
getting together with the likes of Alex and Stuart and Emma and everyone for Lost in France.
Mm.
Was there a point during that whole kind of experience that you just kind of sat there and looked around and went, God, this might never have happened. I can't believe that we've both been brought together. Or is it just a case of...
I don't think it was for me, but it was...
Because you're insensitive.
I'm quite insensitive. I was probably thinking, how does this relate to me and how can I profit from it, you know? Because that's what I fucking do. No, I mean, it was a really great. We were down there for three or four days, and it was brilliant.
The photos are phenomenal.
Yeah, you'll love the film. It's really good.
I'm so looking forward to it.
It's really good. It's basically just us telling jokes and telling fucking funny stories, you know, and some great music. And Alex and I wrote a song while we were down there. We ended up doing it at the show, and he actually pointed out at the time, it was like, it's the first time we'd been on stage together for 23 years.
God, that's amazing.
It's mental. So there was lots of little things like that happened that were actually quite remarkable. Fuck, I mean, if you think of the talent pool there, you think of, you know, if you think of the records that we made just from those people that changed people's lives.
Yeah, it's how defining it has been for the Scottish music plane. And just,
that's true, actually,
it's, you know, how much has that kind of impacted what has happened now, even to... I mean, obviously, we have said that we believe that the music industry is fucked.
Well, we've been saying that for a while, but I think the key difference is now that it's happened.
Yeah.
It was fucked 3 years ago when we said it was getting fucked. And what's happening now is that people have run out of life savings to run their labels and to run their websites and to run their bands. You know, bands are really fucking expensive.
Yeah.
I mean, I do okay. You know, I've been able to tour a lot. But the only reason I can make a living out of it is because it's just me and my car.
Oh, no, totally,
You know? So I can go away and go away for a week and come back with a couple of grand or... Because I'm not spending any money, you know? It's not... there's a reason why you see a lot of breaking artists or solo artists and duos. It's because it's almost impossible to break a new band.
Yeah.
Because it's just too expensive. Fees haven't gone up in line with inflation. And people have a lot less money to go and see small bands.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was... Also, there's just so much fucking music now. Or, actually, there was always so much fucking music, but there's... It's... A problem we had on Telling the Trees, which we'd never had before, was it wasn't... wasn't people didn't like the record, or... Actually, I don't even know if they would, because it's so difficult to get anyone to reply to your email. It's the indifference.
Yeah.
And actually, indifference is wrong. It's, I mean, you know, you run a label, it's the sheer amount of unsolicited mail you get makes it very difficult to actually deal with any of it.
Yeah. My issue now is that you just seem to get about 15 to 20 MailChimp mail outs a day from these artists that all seem to be at the same level.
Yeah.
That become a bit kind of inconsequent. It's like it means nothing. You listen to this music, and unfortunately, if it had been like 10 years ago, you would have been like, oh my God, this is great.
But now it's
just the same.
Do you know what? It's not even moving. I've seen it so. I mean, it happened to me when I worked in the music industry and I was a promoter. I lost my love of music pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
To the point where I go back and listen to stuff that I'd been exposed to early on when I was working there, and I listen to it now and I fucking love it. But at the time, it was just another band, and it was just, fuck this.
Yeah.
I don't want to do it. Nothing will kill your love of music quite as quickly as working in the music industry.
That's
you know, and it's... And it's something that I now have to fight against from my side, from the musician side. Because, yeah, it's been really difficult to get press for Telling the Trees. Like, a lot more difficult than it's ever been before.
I remember when we last spoke about this and you were quite... It was just... I think it was the period just before the album was coming out. And it's that period that's the worst for any artist.
I always get all in anyway.
But I was so relieved when I started kind of seeing everything come through, and you did seem to like things, but the things you were getting, it was people that genuinely felt
that's phenomenal. Yeah.
There
just wasn't, it's like a spoiled fucking brat, but it's a lot of the times it's not about, there's a level of public consciousness that you have to reach before any of that, before the good stuff matters.
Yeah.
So, the Scottish press pretty much ignored the album. I mean, fucking, Yeah. I mean, the Scotsman Herald, Sunday Herald, The List, The Skinny.
That's mental.
I mean, most of them reviewed it. Herald Group didn't even review it. But there was no features, there was no interviews. And that's fine. You know, I'm not, it's not like I'm fucking entitled to guaranteed interviews. But
why do you think that?
I don't know. I think there was an element of it being my fifth album in 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
So there definitely was an element of, we've been writing about his albums every year now, or a lot anyway. So we'll maybe skip this one. The problem came because they all skipped it. It wasn't. The National did a nice piece actually.
Yeah.
But the and Evening Times actually as well. But it was. I don't want this to turn into me just fucking moaning about my records not getting pressed. But in the larger context,
yeah.
There's so little column space and so many people vying for
totally.
Them.
Totally. And you I know, think so that's the thing that you're trying to get at is that...
Yeah, apart from me just wallowing a little bit, you know, it's...
But I think it's good for people. I think it's especially for emerging artists. It's good for them to hear this as well because, you know, it just shows you that it doesn't matter, you know.
Nope.
There's even big artists that we would consider big that are like, they're just not getting anything.
No, nope. And then, yeah. It's a massive kick in the balls, you know. It's it really fucked with my mental health in a bad way. To the point where Stuart from Kempo, he had to come. I went out into Ravema and had a full breakdown, and he had to come pick me up from Leicester.
Really?
Yeah, because I just flipped out. Just fucking couldn't handle it anymore. And when that happens, you go home and go. This maybe isn't the best career choice for me.
In a couple of years, you will hopefully look back at this and go, okay, if this hadn't happened, then this wouldn't happen.
Yeah, I mean, inevitably.
HKFU, yes. I have to talk about. So, Sarah, like, she has, you and her have become quite good friends in terms of, and she's been quite integral in your life, setting things like that.
Absolutely. It was, weirdly though, she was the last person I met from the records.
Yeah.
Even though she lives, like, 10 minutes from here.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'd recorded, we'd done our song, we'd mixed and finished before we actually met. I heard HKFU kind of mid last year, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And fucking loved it. And I think it was Dust and Dirt, I think it was on
the
play. First sound like 808 State, but kind of a really fucked up 808 State,
mm-hmm.
which I really liked. And I remember actually thinking once I first heard it that I wish that I hadn't already filled the album.
Right.
Because the album was actually full at that point. And I remember thinking, fuck, I'd really like to do something with this person. And then Charlotte Church pulled out because she was originally on the album. So I got all excited because then I could ask Sarah. So I ended up asking Sarah, who wrote and recorded and did her arrangements and did some restructuring of the song actually as well in 5 days.
Yeah, she's crazy. Like, yeah. She'll do it in such a quick time.
It was so good. And it was actually, I was away with Kirsty, with my partner Kirsty, because being the awesome girlfriend she had, she'd booked a long weekend away for after the album mixing.
Yeah.
So we were down in Kintyre in this place with really shitty internet connection, but that was the point. And I just sent Sarah this stuff, and we booked the extra day of mixing that we were going to need. You know, but basically the album was finished. And at that point, I could have released the album without that song. And, you know, but we're like, right, fuck, let's see if Sarah's up for doing it, and if she is, amazing. And if not, we've got an album. And we were away, and I got this email with the wee thing. I was like, fuck. I remember it took about an hour to download on my phone.
Oh my god.
And then Kirsty just sitting there going, fuck. And then listening to it in the kitchen in that place, and just like, fuck.
Yeah.
It's really good. Yeah, she did an amazing job. And Sarah, on the Scottish tour, Sarah learned over 3/4 of the album.
Yeah.
So that when I didn't have a collaborator there, she could do the song. And did it beautifully.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Obviously, the next thing, I guess, as you've talked about quite a lot, is the album with Aidan.
Yeah.
So there is a focus on that. And
there's actually another album as well that's going to come out later this year.
Right.
That I've not told anyone about yet.
But you're doing...
Yeah, it's done. Oh, it's almost done.
Is it solo?
It's almost done. It's different.
Is it solo?
It's different.
Okay.
It's not necessarily an R.M. Hubbard record.
Right.
But I started making 3 albums last year.
Jesus.
So Tell No Trees was the first to come out. This one will come out at some point this year, and then the one in Fade will be next year.
Wow. Yeah.
Thank you for having me.
No, thank you.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.